The first reading is from the book of Judges. The Spirit of the Lord came upon Jephthah. He passed through Gilead and Manasseh, and through Mizpah Gilead as well. And from there he went on to the Ammonites. Jephthah made a vow to the Lord. If you deliver the Ammonites into my power, he said, whoever comes out of the doors of my house to meet me when I return in triumph from the Ammonites shall belong to the Lord. I shall offer him up as a burnt offering. Jephthah then went on to the Ammonites to fight against them, and the Lord delivered them into his power, so that he inflicted a severe defeat on them, from Aroer to the approach of Minnith, 20 cities in all, and as far as Abel Keramim. Thus were the Ammonites brought into subjection by the children of Israel. When Jephthah returned to his house in Mizpah, it was his daughter who came forth, playing the tambourines and dancing. She was an only child. He had neither son nor daughter besides her. When he saw her, he rent his garments and said, alas, daughter, you have struck me down and brought calamity upon me, for I have made a vow to the Lord and I cannot retract. She replied, father, you have made a vow to the Lord. Do with me as you have vowed, because the Lord has wrought vengeance for you on your enemies, the Ammonites. Then she said to her father, let me have this favour. Spare me for 2 months, that I may go off down the mountains to mourn my virginity with my companions. Go, he replied, and send her away for 2 months. So she departed with her companions and mourned her virginity on the mountains. At the end of the 2 months, she returned to her father, who did to her as he had vowed. The Gospel reading is from St. Matthew, chapter 22. Jesus again in reply spoke to the chief priests and the elders of the people in parables, saying, the kingdom of heaven may be likened to a king who gave a wedding feast for his son. He dispatched his servants to summon the invited guests to the feast, but they refused to come. A second time he sent other servants, saying, tell those invited, behold, I have prepared my banquet. My calves and fattened cattle are killed, and everything is ready. Come to the feast. Some ignored the invitation and went away, one to his farm, another to his business. The rest laid hold of his servants, mistreated them, and killed them. The king was enraged and sent his troops, destroyed those murderers, and burnt their city. Then the king said to his servants, the feast is ready, but those who were invited were not worthy to come. Go out therefore into the main roads and invite to the feast whomever you find. The servants went out into the streets and gathered all they found, bad and good alike, and the hall was filled with guests. But when the king came in to meet the guests, he saw a man there not dressed in a wedding garment. He said to him, my friend, how is it that you came in here without a wedding garment? But he was reduced to silence. Then the king said to his attendants, bind his hands and feet and cast him into the darkness outside, where there will be wailing and grinding of teeth. Many are invited, but few are chosen. The readings are quite difficult today. They're full of violence, strange vows, and what seem like completely disproportionate reactions to events. Experience bears out that at the time of a wedding, there usually are some tensions and old family wounds that cause anxiety to the bride and groom, at least about what the seating arrangements are going to be. But there's nothing in our experience remotely like the blanket refusal of all the guests to turn up, their murderous reaction when the host tries to enforce the invitations, and his extreme prejudice in killing them, burning their city, and inviting anybody and everybody in their place. Until he finds an unfortunate man who, not expecting to be invited to a wedding that day, was, not surprisingly, not dressed appropriately. In the first reading from the book of Judges, we find another king, also wanting supreme control of his situation, doing a deal with God, and in the process imprisoning himself in a foolish vow. Not to mention the consequences for his daughter, who is given 2 months to mourn her virginity before submitting to the requirements of her father's vow. That first reading feels very pagan, as if God is just another force within the world's affairs, with whom deals can be struck and whose behaviour can somehow be controlled if only we can work out the kind of thing he would like in return. Perhaps this is the contrast we can think about as we meditate on these readings, a contrast between the attempt to control, which we see in Jephthah and in the king in the parable, and a contrasting attitude of faith or trust, which is what at the end of the gospel reading we are invited to have. Be ready always to receive an invitation. Be ready always to respond to an invitation. Be prepared for what is to come, for surprises and creativity, for newness and the breath of the Spirit. Normally, all this comes to us in the people we meet from day to day. The men at the centre of the two stories want to be in control and to force events along the lines they want, even at the price of violence to others. The strange little parable added at the end about the man without a wedding garment is a familiar call from Jesus to be always alert, always watchful, always ready, because we do not know the day or the hour. Jephthah's daughter is known to us only as Jephthah's daughter, his only child. We are never told her name, only that she submitted with remarkable docility to what her father's vow required. Her understanding of the iron rules of engaging with the divine reality seems to have been the same as her father's. She is given 2 months to mourn her virginity, to lament the fact that she will die without the fruitfulness that bearing children would have given her. It is another strange aspect to the story, although we could use that phrase, mourning virginity, to describe the contrast I have mentioned between the desire to control, to close things down, to shut them in, to make them fruitful only on our terms, and an openness to life and new creation, which faith in God gives us. He is the God of the living, not of the dead. He is the God of freedom and new things, not a God trapped in iron rituals and inflexible laws. Many people who are expected to preach today might decide to speak instead about St. Bernard of Clairvaux, whose feast it is. That would not necessarily solve all the problems about preaching today, since Bernard's romantic and sweet spirituality is not everybody's cup of tea. But we can at least make a link between the readings of the day and Bernard's devotion to Mary as the fruitful virgin, the one who is full of grace, full of faith and trust in God's purpose, and so one in whom God can produce extraordinary fruit. Virginal fruitfulness is fruitfulness without violence. The Church's tradition teaches us that Mary's motherhood is like that, opening the door for us to a new understanding of God and of God's way of working in the world. We need to prepare ourselves to cast off the garments of our old ways of thinking, especially about God, and to allow God to clothe us in the wedding garment, which is Christ, to be in the presence of one who is simply love, simply creative, simply living and life-giving, always.